Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. So, let's start from the top. We've got a bunch of new shirts in, a bunch of new clothes, a bunch of new branded logos with our friends over at Balcony's. You can find those things at whiskeymerch.com. That's whiskey with the E, merch.com. Right off the bat, I can tell you that I know I've been doing a lot of like spirited conversations with non-whiskey related interesting people, and to much people's enjoyment. But also there's been a few of my like really whiskey heavy folks who have been wanting me to do a few more industry related topics. So today I actually sit down with a man that was, I would say, if he's not the person who really started the whiskey movement in Houston, I would say he's up there. He's up there in terms of he's in the conversation. Mike Raymond from Reserve 101 and Cottonmouth Club. Reserve 101 has been here in Houston for about 12 years. Also joined with us today. So backing up, last night at the Whiskeys of the World event here in Houston, I ran into Melissa Wallet. Melissa Wallet and I have been working together with Spirits Brands. She used to work with The Real McCoy. Now she works with Glenmorangie and The Whistler Irish Whiskey. We have been working. She's been to my event a bunch for about 4 or 5 years together. I haven't seen her in a while. I ran into her last night at Whiskeys of the World, and I thought, you would be a great guest. Come on my show. To which she said, absolutely not. She didn't want to be on camera. So Melissa brings along a friend and local bar manager at Le Colonial. Why can I not say Le Colonial? You know when you say a word so much, it starts to not make sense? La Colonial? Le Colonial. You know what I'm trying to say. She's the bar manager there, and I couldn't be a bigger fan. She was fantastic. So we sit down today. We open a few special bottles and just talk. We talk about events. We talk about this industry. We even get into a little bit of a debate between Jack Daniels and whether or not finished bourbons are bourbons. I'm not quite sure I still understand or fully grasp exactly where everyone lied, but where their opinions lie. But it was a great conversation nonetheless. So early bird tickets are over. The Whiskey Social is in full swing. The event is February 8th. Check out the event at YouTube or anywhere else. HoustonWhiskeySocial.com. Google them. You can find the event pretty much anywhere. And I think couple of reads. So this week's show is, as always, sponsored by Tilao de Sal Artisan Spirits, leader in premium artisan products like Bunahaben, Deanston, Lecheg, Tobermory, Baines, Black Bottle, and Scottish Leader. If you pick up the entire line at your local liquor store, or if you are a retailer, reach out to your United Wine Spirits rep. Last, but definitely not least, Whiskey Neat is supported by the Inspired Spirits at Glass Rev Imports and Amroot Distilleries. We love featuring Amroot whiskeys on the show. Amroot crafts single malt whiskey to the exacting standards of Scotch. And if you need any proof at all, well, at this year's Proof Awards, Amroot Fusion received double gold, 96 points, in a blind tasting by 30 industry judges. Fusion also was declared World Whiskey of the Year at the Bartender Spirits Awards, awarding it 94 points and a gold medal. Amroot appreciates that the great state of Texas has become the number one consumer of this elixir of life, which is what the word Amroot means in America. So that covers all of our bases. Thank you again, John Witherspoon, for coming on last week. Barry Laminek, love you, man. I brought you a shirt. You're not here yet. I'm going to track you down and bring it to you. Without further ado, Alexa and Mike, cheers. Mike, thanks
how
so
are
much
you,
for coming.
It's
thanks for
a
having
long,
me.
Long time coming. Alexa, yep. Very nice meeting
Hello.
You.
Hello, nice to meet you too.
We have kind of been in each other's world the past 5 or so years. You've been doing this a whole lot longer than anyone else in Houston, as far as I know.
A couple days, yeah.
A couple days.
A little over 10 years, yeah?
Well, January will be 12 years for Reserve.
12, wow.
And then, you know, I've been in Houston for 19 years.
Wow.
So. And hospitality in general for 30 years. So
I have no idea how old you are.
That's a good thing.
If you
right?
said if you said you were 40, I'd be like, oh, he's 40. But you,
hey,
but
41.
I have a yeah. I'm thinking a little older maybe. But you I look old as shit. And
you have four kids.
I have four kids. Yeah. So you're carrying it well.
Thank you. I'm well whiskey preserved.
Yeah. Pickled.
So,
yeah.
Pickled. Sure.
Yeah. Speaking of pickling. Let's jump into this.
All right.
So here's I know off camera, our good friend, longtime industry friend, Melissa, is off camera. She's brought in some Glenmorangie, some stuff. And then she's talked about the Whistler, which I'm not super familiar with. It's an Irish whiskey. And I figured we could start there. Yeah? The Whistler? Sweet. All right. So hand that over here. What we'll do is I also brought a few things myself.
There you go, sir.
We pour, we talk.
Just a small amount. We got a lot of booze up here, right?
We have a lot of booze.
Yeah, there's a lot. Don't worry about working. This is living right here.
Yeah, well, we've got some dump glasses there. So if there is anything that you're not sure you want to finish and you see if, you know, there's 10 bottles on the table, then.
There are, and I do have a job. So
I
will have to be able to function normally.
I've been looking for a reason to open this one, too. So I found an old bottle of black and white. Scotch whiskey from the 50s. And
wow.
I'm not even entirely sure how to open this thing.
So that's never been opened.
No, I was wondering,
I was like, where did you wrap that in plastic wrap or did you like, you just never opened it? It's very old. How old is that?
So it was bottled in the 50s. This is what you'd
wow.
call a spring cap. Yeah. Yeah. These are, they're not very common. I have no idea what the cork preservation is going to look like, but. Well, I'll figure this out as we talk because this is a nightmare, but great radio, right?
Yeah, perfect, right? at least people can visually see you struggling,
yeah. Well,
right?
A lot of them will. So this will be on the, you know, you guys check out the Facebook video and whatnot. Yeah, these old bottles are just crazy interesting.
Wow.
But I've been looking for a reason to open it, and we were trying to work out a vintage tasting at the Whiskey Social this year with like we did the second year.
Yeah.
And I know you, how many have you been to?
I've only been to the one. To be honest with you, I don't go to a lot of whiskey shows anymore.
Sure.
Mostly because they're all the same.
You know
what I mean? You know, obviously this is taped and it will air sometime next week, but last night was Whiskeys of the World.
Sure.
And really what it comes down to is you have the same brands.
Sure.
And they're pouring the same expressions. So there's not a lot of juice being poured that I haven't had.
Oh, that, yeah.
So when you think about,
especially when you've been doing this for
a day or two,
years, probably
yeah.
seen it all
two, three days, right?
Yeah.
Two or three days.
So the ones that excite me a little bit more would be like a Whiskey Fest. So I think it's Whiskey Fest San Francisco would be tomorrow. So California has a whole different set of laws than Texas has. So if you go to – like I went to Whiskey Fest San Francisco, I don't know, probably 6, 7 years ago. And things like Cavalon were being poured before it was being poured anywhere else in the country.
Sure.
So that excites me a little bit more because I get to try different things. And really the only whiskey show I go to religiously is Nth in Vegas. So Mahesh Patel is a private collector in Atlanta. He's put this on. Every March, April. So this past April was the 9th. So next year will be the 10th anniversary. And the big thing with that show is that every table is pouring at least a $300 an ounce or higher
sure.
whiskey. So when I bring things in, like say, Glenmorangie Pride, in the current system in Texas, I'm assuming that I'm going to buy that product blindly. And we're talking about a $55,000 to $6,000 a bottle product.
Wow.
So, you know, it's not like the local reps, you know, are pouring samples. Like, hey, do you want to have this? You go to Nth.
Try it there.
They're pouring it. And so that's how I get to.
What are the tickets run there?
It's like $525 for the base ticket. And then there's a higher echelon ticket, which is like the high roller ticket. And that's sure. like $1,200.
Sure.
They used to do a companion ticket, which I'm really hoping they bring back. So the companion ticket is because it's in Vegas. So I would assume a lot of wives or husbands, depending on who the whiskey drinker in the family is, would be like, oh, you think I'm going to let you go to Vegas for sure. 3 days
sure.
unchaperoned? No, I'm coming with you and I'm going to go shopping or I'm going to do this. I'm going to do whatever. So they have companion tickets for like $200, which sure. is good for like wine and champagne.
Right, right, right. They don't get to like experience the higher. See, the laws are different here too. It makes it infinitely more harder. Is in Texas, you can do a non-licensed venue, but you have to follow it. Like last night at Whiskeys of the World, they used the Chronicle building, which is non-licensed. But you can't, once bodies are in the building, you can't say you can only have this and you can't have this.
Right.
You have to allow them access to anything that's available.
Right.
So the way you work around that is by, okay, VIP gets in an hour early.
Yeah. And then you pour off.
Correct.
Then you, in theory, you pour off whatever that bottle.
Of it, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, every time Danielle with Glenfiddich, every time they pull out the Lady Bourne 42.
Yeah. It's gone in seconds.
It's gone. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 42 years old, it's gone almost immediately. Do you ever go to these?
I was just about to ask, like, is this kind of like a free-for-all kind of tasting just to get general knowledge from people in the industry? Is this something that you just get invited to and it's kind of like, or is it for like people that love whiskey and they're seeking out to taste all kinds of whiskey? Like, how does that work?
Yes, all the above.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's all of it.
Maybe a little column B. Yeah, it's
okay.
A little bit of it all. So there's industry folks come. If you're industry, a lot of times you'll get what you'd call a free ticket.
Okay.
Is that what we call it?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, where was I?
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. It's Melissa's fault.
I love these events and I act the best after like three or four of these scotches.
Wait a second. On a bigger scale. Yeah.
Right.
So
okay.
a lot of you typically, you know, a great event, it's got a few hundred offerings. Obviously you can't work through a few hundred offerings.
Right. Yeah.
But you've got some variety to kind of prioritize and jump around. And then also the consumer comes so that they can learn about whiskey.
Right.
They can learn from Mike is pretty well known for hosting classes at these.
Okay.
We've done a few of them.
Right.
And then so people can come and get the educational piece and then the nerds can come and, you know, you get there early, you get to try some.
Is anyone like purchasing? Because I know like at our restaurant, they, you know, different vendors and reps come in and we'll do different tastings just to kind of see like, you know, do I want to put something new on the shelves for myself and for the restaurant? And they'll actually host classes for the restaurant.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah. There's something similar. Wow. I don't know if WOW's still doing it, but they used to do an industry event that happened earlier that day. Right. Or what was it?
Yeah, I don't know if he did it this time, and I can't remember if he had it planned, you know, because obviously the storm that came through a couple weeks ago postponed it. So it was supposed to be 2 weeks ago, and
sure.
then it got postponed. So, you know, again, Doug sends me emails about stuff, and sometimes it kind of goes in one year out the other year,
sure.
so to speak. And that goes for a lot of things.
Sure,
You know, if I get a thousand emails a day, literally,
yeah,
it's kind of like a lot of my day is triage.
Sure.
So it's like, you know, oh, hey, we had this thing in like 8 months. I'll worry about
it. Reach out to me in 7 months
yeah.
and 4 days.
Yeah. There's people that want to like book parties like 2 years out. I'm like, are you crazy?
Sure. Sure.
Sure. Let's do that. And I want $1 million to hold the room and then we'll go out of business and we'll just retire.
Then we'll go out of business.
They would invite industry folks and they would do a lot of the buyers would come, store owners. And TPSA does one as well. That's all industry only. That it's not open to the public.
That's
so if
cool.
you're there in the building, you're a buyer of some sort. Buyer for a bar.
Right.
Hotels.
Well,
liquor stores.
I need to go to more of these then. Honestly.
They're great.
We had the whole reason this bottle was here is so we use non-licensed, which means we can bring in our own bottles.
Okay.
Yeah, they don't, it's a great idea in theory, but it's quite the hoops to jump through to get it here legally in the state. And then it's not always practical. But I wanted to host a vintage tasting like we did it the second year. We found, and he's passed recently, but Winston Churchill's great-grandson was here.
Wow.
And so we had bottles from the 19th during World War II that you could taste and drink with the direct lineage of Winston. So it's kind of like a neat thing
that's
on paper.
Very cool.
Was that the one you came to? Or was it you came to the one in the Citadel, which I think was two
I years. Think the first year at Citadel.
The hot year.
Or second year.
It was a
yeah, that was a super hot one. Yeah.
It was a July because of another similar event. When these events happen, you have to space them out. Mm-hmm. So we had an event that grabbed our date in May or March, and so we ended up having to push it out to July. But we couldn't go too far because WoW is in September. So it's like this weird.
Everything's kind of like
together. You also have to think about the national ones. So like, as I said, tomorrow is San Francisco's Whiskey Fest. And then like November is New York's festival.
Uh-huh. When's the Vegas one?
The Vegas one, I want to say it's going to be around April 20th of 2020. I got the email like 2 weeks ago.
Are you going to that?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, of course.
You go every year? How long have you been going?
I've gone every single year.
Since its beginning?
Since year one.
And, that's really odd. And it's every year?
Every year.
Every year in Vegas?
2020 is going to be the 10th anniversary show.
So it'll be a big one. It's
very cool.
I know Mahesh pretty well. And his wife, Nina. And it's turning into the same thing every year now. Is like 2 weeks out, he gets nervous about high roller tickets sales.
Pushing them, yeah.
And he's like, hey, can you send out an email or can you do anything to help promote? Yeah, of course. This year in Vegas, is like, look, Mahesh, next year's your 10-year anniversary. How will you call me once you've recovered from everything and to kind of settle? Because, I mean, it's daunting. Chris will tell you how hard it is to put on one of these shows.
It's ridiculous.
And it's ridiculously expensive.
This whiskey here is going to have a lot of different things going on. It's been sitting in the bottle for 70 years. So there is going to be some elements of bottle aging going on top of, you know, what would be considered more primitive, crude distilling practices.
70 years ago.
Yeah, 70, 80 years ago.
Right.
And all these other things that there's going to be some nuance in here.
Right.
So in terms of interesting, it's going to be a very fascinating experience regardless of what it tastes like.
I'm really excited. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, but you want to have this early in the night and you want this late in the night
or early in the day.
So what happens though is that, so say, yeah, or whatever, right? But the idea is that if you're at a buddy's house and there's 20 of you and there's 100 bottles on the table, after a third or fourth one, you're going to have diminished returns.
Right.
And if you have
you feel like, just to play a little devil's advocate, don't you feel like you get to a point in your whiskey experience that you can – knowing that you can still appreciate certain, like I go to these events last night and I didn't have, when I first started going to these events, I would have an order. I would save Pete for last.
Yeah.
But when you walk in last night, Arbeg was the first table.
Yeah.
And
sneaky bastards.
Yeah. Yeah. But it doesn't, I know that it's going to be, but because of my experience with whiskey, I feel like I can still tell a difference. Whereas I think a newer person would be more influenceable.
So let me ask you a question.
Class.
If you came in early in the night, right. So first, second table is going to be like an Ardbeg and say it's over 100 proof.
Sure.
Right.
Wake you up.
Yeah. But guess what? If you went then to say
the Glenmorangie table at 80 proof.
Yeah. At 80 proof. And you have like that Quinta Rubin that we're talking about.
Oh, beautiful.
It's beautiful whiskey. But do you think you're going to get all the nuance and everything that's going in there after coming from the Ardbeg table next door?
I agree with you. What I'm saying is I've already had the Quinta Rubin.
Yeah.
For a new drinker,
I'm talking about new drinkers, in order.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
and that's what I'm talking
for
about.
For our little club get togethers where people just kind of have what we call a bottle share. Everybody brings some bottles. You try some things. I think even I've had the spectrum and I feel comfortable drinking out of order. It doesn't bother me to start with Laphroaig and then go to the – I mean, depending on how bad that glass. I mean, Lone Elm does the Texas wheat whiskey that ruins your glass.
Right.
And last night it just basically – I had to get a new glass. It just coats the entire glass, turns brown. And it's just because it's a thick, viscous oil bomb. It would taint my opinion of maybe the next thing I put in there.
Right.
But generally speaking, most of the time, if I'm at a bottle share and we're trying stuff, it's like, you know, like I've had every iteration of current Laphroaig and someone brought one from 10 years ago. I feel like I still get that it's Laphroaig. Like,
right.
I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to be too
But certain
confused.
People like aim for this – And when I'm doing tastings and things like that, I'm like, I have to kind of gauge the clientele, because if you like a super peaty whiskey like this, then that's what you like. But some people aren't in kind of tune with that kind of like leathery taste. They want something that's more smooth and that's like a double wood, like Balvenie, sure. You know what I'm saying?
Softer. Yeah.
So yeah. And I didn't really even know that it could coat your glass like you were saying.
Sure.
I didn't know that it had that ability to kind of like mess with the flavors of anything else that you're putting in the same glass. I didn't even know that was something that
big time
whiskey could do.
Ever have brimstone?
Yeah.
I have not.
So, but the thing is that the fear is that there's no chaperoning per se sometimes that in too. These things. Yeah. So, you know, ideally you would have someone that leads the group and kind of
guides everybody.
You know what I mean? Which is no different than like when we do whiskey classes and we bring in a master
Richard
distiller.
Patterson. Yeah. He walks us through each.
He's okay.
I'd like to get him in here. So I forget who it was. The names kind of blur together over the years, but the guy that was in charge of this market for Dalmore,
Joshua Scott.
Yes, Joshua Scott. Is he still in charge?
No, he left. Right, he left. We have – so Wyatt McKay, and I'm going to say we a lot because I do a lot with them.
Sure.
And Richard is, literally my mentor.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the one of the first big guys that kind of took me under their wing and really taught me the business. So I still do a lot with them in various capacities. But Joshua left. There's a new gentleman who's based out of Dallas.
I think I have his name.
Christian?
Yep, that's it. Olaf.
Yep.
Christian Olaf. Yep.
Nice guy.
Very nice guy.
They've done some – Wyatt McKay has done some amazing hiring over the last year. See, Joshua is great. And I still talk to Joshua. He's working with a tequila brand now. But Joshua was great. He was the guy that kind of so people understand why McKay used to be part of Beam at one time before it was Beam Inc. and now it's Beam Suntory.
Sure.
And then when the company sold, Wyatt McKay went to an Indian billionaire who lost his ass on his airlines. So he sold it. And it was United Spirits is what he owned in India, number one distributor in India.
Sure.
And Diageo bought them. And when Diageo bought them, they bought everything. All they wanted was the trade routes into India. India is one of the hottest emerging markets in the world.
Sure, especially for whiskey.
For anything.
Yeah.
But, whiskey for sure. So the issue was that Diageo had to get rid of Wyatt McKay out of the portfolio of United, because there's a grain distillery in the Wyatt McKay portfolio. And that would put Diageo over the limit and make them a monopoly of grain distilleries, which is against the law. So basically it took a year and a half to sell. Like basically the SWA is like, look, we're not telling you had to drop it today, but you have to be actively trying. Like we're not going to force you to take a bad deal. But you have to be active. You can't just I'll get to it, one day. And 30 years from now, you finally sell it. So it took about a year and a half for the company to sell. Joshua was the only person in the United States living here representing Wyatt McKay during that time.
Wow.
So then the sale happened. It's a brandy company out of the Philippines that bought them. So then that created a lot of different things. And then in the United States, it's now Gallo. Is distributing for the United States. But once that happened, they basically restructured their entire brand ambassador team. So Alistair, who used to be with Diageo, he's now one of their sales, one of their brand guys.
Sure.
Nicholas Palacki, who's one of my really dearest friends, who was the West Coast and then East Coast guy for Balvenie, and then he was doing private corporate stuff. He's now their director of education for Jura. Jordan Zimmerman just left for Brown-Forman, and she was Edrington for a long time.
Sure.
So she was covering the entire Northeast basically for Wyatt McKay. So there was, these are all star people. This is like creme de la creme, some of the best in the business representing this brand. So it's kind of poised on top of that. They brought in the blender from Compass Box. So Richard just hit.
Speaking of which, John, John Glazer's coming to town.
Yeah. He hasn't been here in a hot minute.
It's been a minute. He'll be on the show.
Nice.
That's another one of those long time Scotch industry legends. It's just the stuff he's done has been helped universally change the perception of what blended whiskey means. It's not a less than thing. And Scotch single malt has been like the king of marketing, right? To be able to say a single malt whiskey.
Well, in the United States.
Sure.
So that, again, that's an issue. And that's something I take on what I call pet projects. So blends, whether they're American or other, is kind of
a bad word. Yeah.
Well, it's becoming my little pet project.
Sure.
And because if you look at global Scotch sales, like 90% is blends worldwide. So only, 10% is single malt.
Chivas, black and white.
Yep.
Yeah.
But in the United States is the number one buyer single malt. So we have a very slanted, skewed view of the Scotch industry.
Category.
Yeah. So we kind of look at it as blends are inferior and, yada, yada, yada.
Well, number one selling whiskey brand is Jack.
Yeah.
And that in the world of snootyism, Jack kind of didn't get a fair shake often. And there's a lot of people whose
minds
are
higher
have been,
up there. Yeah.
A lot of people's minds have been changed thanks to the stuff that they started releasing their barrel strength program, and their rye is ridiculously fantastic.
Yeah, my single barrel rye just showed up Tuesday.
We've got a standard single barrel that just hit, and our regular Tennessee whiskey and our rye, I'd imagine, probably be a few months.
Look at you. Look at you checking yourself.
Yeah. Well, I know how much it irritates. When I say Jack Daniel's bourbon, people think I'm trying to egg the conversation and poke the bear. I am, but
you can get in that conversation if you want.
Tennessee whiskey.
Are you like pro, or you're pro, and you're
so?
How you feel? I mean,
here's
I'm not creating conflict here. It sounds like you're pro and you're.
Here's a very very simple approach to whether or not Jack Daniel's is a bourbon or not a bourbon.
Okay.
Oh, here we go. Okay. I didn't mean to do this.
Hold on. Before we do this,
I want you guys to remain friends.
I'm so excited about what's about to happen.
I will tell you that I have nothing but respect for Christopher and everything he does. And before this, during this, and after
this. Here comes the insult. But your class is stupid.
No. But we will still be friends.
Okay. Perfect.
So,
I just don't want to ruin a friendship over a question.
No.
If your friendship is ruined over
over Jack Daniels, which is still very popular. Jack Daniels is it's good.
I'm pouring this.
It's a staple.
It's the number one sold whiskey.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like it's a juggernaut.
So there. We're giving it its props where it's due.
Okay, absolutely.
There we go.
So Jack Daniels, what's your stance?
So the very very simple answer to this is if Jack Daniels wanted to be bourbon, they would have been bourbon a long time ago.
Ouch.
Now, what does that mean? Are you saying, because my stance on it might line up with yours, so this is going to be a very lackluster debate, is that they just choose not to be called, but they used to put it on the label. And they put on the label, depending on whether it was an export or not that long ago, a few decades ago. I've always just said that they just choose not to identify as such, that they qualify, they meet all the requirements, they're not disqualified. They just choose not to be called.
Why?
So they do the Lincoln, County process, right? So there is charcoal mellowing after distillation and before barreling.
Okay.
Right? So they're stripping out fats and oils out of the whiskey before they put it into the barrel.
The Gentleman Jack does do it afterwards as well.
They
Post-aging and
post
pre-aging.
And pre.
Yeah.
Okay.
So personally, I feel as if you're altering the flavor of the whiskey. So bourbon says you can't alter the flavor.
That's not true.
Okay.
Depending on how you want to read the definition.
No. Very, very clearly. You can't add to, and taking away is limited up to, I think, 15% of fatty acids. And so once you pull too much from it, it also would potentially change the category. So,
and
for instance,
Jack is doing this or not doing this.
Well, they are.
Is it facts or is it an opinion?
So they strip it. Now, to what end do they strip it? We don't know. There's a lot of brands that do charcoal filtering that are labeled bourbon. In fact, Dickel does a significant number Dickel Tennessee Whiskey also goes through the Lincoln County process, and they sell a lot of their bulk whiskey off to other brands like Barrel and other brands who market them as bourbon. But people get kind of channeled in on just the Jack Daniel's discussion when really it covers all of Tennessee whiskey.
Yeah, and my feeling is this. If they did the charcoal mellowing after they dumped the barrel, I would call it bourbon. If you do it before you put it into barrel, I call it Tennessee Sour Mash or Lincoln County.
So, before it goes in the barrel, it's not anything, right? It's not bourbon.
It's new make whiskey.
Sure.
And it's not even whiskey until it touches the barrel.
Well,
technically. So to be whiskey, you have to be a distilled spirit from cereal grain aged for a period of time in a barrel. So there's no definition.
Container.
Sure.
And corn whiskey doesn't have to be aged. It's the only exception. So yeah. you don't have to throw corn whiskey into a barrel.
Okay, so this is kind of falling into a loophole is what it's sounding like Jack Daniel's is doing. Can you give me an example of one that is absolutely not considered because this sounds like an opinion. It's an opinion that it's not.
That's the whole reason why this thing kind of lines up. There are guidelines that kind of outline the whole thing. For instance, the regulations state that you, in order to be bourbon, it must be in a new make, charred new oak container.
Right.
However, it doesn't say exclusively. So there are some people, there are a couple of distilleries who are taking used American whiskey, means it was in a used barrel.
Yeah.
So let's say you age American whiskey for 6 years in a used barrel, mm-hmm. can't call it bourbon. But if you take that American whiskey out of the used barrel and you put it into a brand new barrel, for 5 seconds, there are some people who are labeling those, bottling those as bourbon because technically it went into a new oak container.
Beer. Okay.
And what I would say is my contention would be the order. So if you did 5 seconds in new oak first and then finished it in used barrels, sure. then I would call it bourbon.
I wouldn't. That's what the whole Maker's Debate was.
Maker's Debate, Angel's Envy debate.
Yep.
And you can even say Red Stag. But my feeling is that once you become –
I don't know a lot about Red Stag.
Well, Red Stag is –
Chris Rock – not Chris Rock. What's – the Rock? No, what's his name? The Kid Rock.
Kid Rock.
Kid Rock. Sorry. Yeah. I was like, what are the Rocks?
You know what? Some Rock.
It's like, Melissa, would you like to
– who knew this? Who
you
knew?
Look like the you listened to some Kid Rock in your life.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, who knew we were going to have a geology class today, right?
Yeah.
So per example would be Red Stag. Red Stag says Kentucky straight bourbon, you know, infused with natural cherry flavor.
Correct. Yes.
Angel's Envy, Kentucky straight bourbon finished in port wine barrels.
Yeah.
So once you become bourbon, you're bourbon, and then as a matter, do you have to modify the label to say, hey, I've been finished, you know.
So you're saying you think it's still, you would still call it bourbon.
I would consider bourbon finished.
Okay.
So, but.
Right. I get what you're saying.
So the DNA is bourbon.
Okay. Agreed.
And then you're saying, all right, I make Kentucky straight bourbon, which would tell you that it's been aged at least 2 years, it was made in Kentucky, yada, 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 yada. Right.
Agreed.
So you've now become bourbon. You've hit all the check marks to be bourbon. You can then take said bourbon and move it into a second barrel. So we get into this conversation with Makers 46. So like we had Bill Samuels was at the bar and you were there that night.
Yep. And Wade said, tried to hit him with it.
Yeah. And Wade tried to hit him and this and that.
I don't remember the end result of that. I think Wade disagreed with him.
Well, yeah, but I wouldn't disagree with the CEO of the company that created the brand that went through all the stuff, right? Because at the end of the day, the issue is really with TTB. It's not with the distillery.
Okay. So – yeah, so it's such a layered feeling on the subject.
It is.
I agree and slightly disagree, but then I agree again. I've always put it like this. So the Jack Daniel's discussion, people always say, well, they make it. They can – like they know what it is. Well, that's not necessarily true. I can make a car. If I make a machine that runs off gas and turns four wheels and has seat belts, I can call it an umbrella. It's a car though. Like, so if you put eggs in this and you put in the thing and you bake it, you cover it in frosting, it's a cake. I can call it a pie. It's not a pie. It's a cake. So Jack can call it whatever they want to call it, but it meets the requirements for bourbon. And if they wanted to call it bourbon, it would fully qualify. I think Jack, there's no issue with it. In fact, their master distiller agrees with that as well. He goes, look, man, prove to me that's not bourbon. It's bourbon. They don't want to call it bourbon. They don't have to call it bourbon. They don't identify as bourbon. That's totally okay. As far as the finishing goes, there is a segment of the regulations that state that and I'm going to butcher the order of this, but it's colorless, harmless. It's basically added flavorings can change the classification. So if you have bourbon and you add yellow number five, you can add the descriptor, the full descriptor, bourbon with added yellow number five, or like in Knob Creek's case, Knob Creek Kentucky Straight Bourbon with maple.
Yeah, smoked syrup, maple.
Smoked maple thing.
Yeah.
So you have to describe it.
Right.
But the describing would make people think that it's still that, even though it's no longer technically that. All of Angel's Envy's TTB labels are filed under whiskey specialties because it's no longer technically bourbon. But by saying it's bourbon with this, it's still not bourbon.
Right.
It was bourbon.
Yeah, it was bourbon. And my contention is once you hit the criteria of being bourbon, you can use bourbon, but you have to be clear.
The descriptor.
Right. Okay.
In the descriptor saying like, hey, finished in port wine barrels.
And is that the issue with Jack? Is that that's not mentioned?
So, it's a little bit different.
Yeah. It's different because and my contention is that what they're doing is altering the flavor of the whiskey before it became bourbon.
And you think that that should be mentioned or somehow?
It is.
Okay.
And that's why when you say the Lincoln County process.
Well, if that's your contention, then wouldn't it be the same thing that when it's charcoal filtered after aging?
After, then I would say it's bourbon. It would be bourbon that's then charcoal mellowed.
Okay. So
does that make sense?
Are you saying, I think I'm understanding, are you saying in the terms of the descriptor, what we're talking about like with Maker's 46? Okay. So you're saying
you
could still say bourbon.
If you hit the markers.
Sure.
Right. So once you hit the markers of brand new charred oak barrel, you know, 51% corn, you know, the proofing regulations, and you do all those things and you age it in the barrel, even if you age it for 5 seconds, you've now become bourbon by every criteria that you need to. And that if you then charcoal mellowed it then you can say it was bourbon charcoal mellowed.
Tennessee straight bourbon
charcoal mellowed, right?
Sure.
But if you're doing it before it's become bourbon, I wouldn't call it bourbon. I would call it Tennessee Sour Mash.
I thought we were coming to a head here.
There's a lot of middle ground that we're in agreement on.
Yeah.
I don't think that there is anything in the regulation that says you can't charcoal filter before, because that's another thing that people like to point out. Oh, it's done before it's aged. Well, that the regulations don't cover before or after aging.
You're saying that doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Well, what it comes down to is how do you view the fats and oils in the whiskey when it's coming off the still. And if you consider it like I do, like the new make spirit coming off the still is much like a ribeye or a slab of bacon, right? Big, fat, juicy, full of flavor. And you're going to then neuter it and make it a
– trim off all the fat.
And make it you know, a filet mignon.
Okay.
Then nice you can't call it a ribeye anymore.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Because what makes it a ribeye is the fat and marbling.
The fat and marbling.
At that point, it's not
very true.
I get what you're saying.
It's still
That's
a steak.
Very true.
It's still a steak. It's still a steak. So it's still whiskey.
But it was never bourbon before it hit the barrel.
Exactly.
Is my whole point.
And I'm saying the same thing, is that if you did that – it's no different if you do chilled filtration, right? You do chilled filtration after it's been fully matured, but before you bottle it, right? So you drop the temperature of this whiskey down, the fats and oils expand, and you run it through a filter.
Get real thick, like when you leave, you know, like you ever cook a grease, right? Mm-hmm. And then you put it in the fridge, and the next day it's like layers of icebergy.
Right.
Same thing. You drop the temp on these to where the fats and oils solidify, making it real thick. And then you, like you said, force it through a filter,
and then they do it for cosmetic reasons. But it does change the taste of the whiskey.
Gotcha.
It changes the viscosity of the whiskey.
I will agree. Yeah.
And you know, again, for me personally, I would rather have any whiskey I drink be non-chill filter. Is that practical? No, because companies like Jack Daniel's do it for a reason. They don't want you to walk into your local liquor store and see a cloudy bottle because you're going to say, oh, there's something wrong with my whiskey.
Sure.
Yeah.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with it, but a consumer is going to send it back to the distillery, and it's just an added headache that the distillery does not have to deal with in their life.
It's expensive.
Yeah.
A lot of the barrel selections we do, we always ask them, most of the time the answer is no, but we ask them to leave the char in the – like don't filter out the char. Sagamore – did a fantastic job. We got special permission, and so when the bottles came in, there was a tremendous amount of black char just sitting at the bottom of the bottle.
Really?
Yeah, and the average consumer would take it back to the store and reject it, or an ignorant, and I say ignorant in the sense of not knowing any better, not in an insulting way, but an ignorant store owner or an ignorant distributor would say there's something wrong with this order, right, and send it back.
Right.
And so it's a way to just make sure that if it's always clean, it's always clear, there's no problems, he'll take it. We don't have to worry about it.
How'd you get that? Well, because we actually just Sagamore's fairly new?
Fairly newish, yeah. Right? They're really popular in Baltimore, but now they're in Texas. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we just took on Sagamore.
They're really big in Sweden, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they're based out of Baltimore.
No, I know, but you know what I'm saying, right?
You said I'm from Baltimore.
Yeah, no.
Great things out of Baltimore.
What was it, Singles? When it's Eddie Vedder is like, man, we're huge in Sweden. Yeah. I always... It's funny, if you're big in one city, but even if you're from that city, it's just.
Whitmire's is big here. You know, Pinhook, they did the same thing. We got them to leave the char in. And
that's really, really cool. And Sagamore is really nice also. I actually really, when I tasted that, I was like, God, I kind of have to have this on the shelf because it's like very smooth. I really enjoyed that.
It's really well received. I was a little nervous. So I wasn't sure if it was going to do well enough, because anytime you introduce, there's so many new whiskeys coming out that anytime you introduce, you're trying to gauge, if I vouch for this, isn't it gonna
is it going to move off the shelf? Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, there's some really cool things out there that I'm like, man, this stuff is great.
Yeah.
You know, it has a good price point. It's really cool. It's really interesting, you know. But if the general consumer doesn't know about it.
Right. If you don't have the education or the knowledge, it sounds really cool when you sit down.
Yeah. I mean, like I had a brand that I absolutely love. I think the product's great.
What is it?
It is Star Ward.
Oh, yeah. I had him last night.
It's awesome.
Alfonso Quinones, I think.
Yeah. Well, he's doing more on the rum side, but he's helping. And he's doing the Casa.
The Westward. Yes.
And he's also doing the Casa Magdalena rum.
Okay.
And I think he tips his toes a little bit into Star Ward, but I don't know.
It's Australian single malt?
Australian single malt that comes in under $50 a bottle.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And it's tasty.
That's nice.
That means they're making no money on that.
I don't know, right? You know, I mean, that's what you would think, but somehow they figured out, because usually stuff from that part of the world, you're looking at around $200 a bottle.
Right.
So if you're getting something at that price, for me as a bar owner, this is something that's easy for me to push.
Right.
Easy, you know, staff can get, you know, like, hey, man, it's $10 a shot or whatever. It comes out to be $12 a shot. And, you know, it's, you know, a guest coming in is not going to get sticker shock, where it's like, oh, man, you really need to try this. You know, $50 a dram whiskey, that's a different sell than saying, hey, $12.
Right.
Because people are like, oh, $12, that's not a big deal. Right. You know, I'm probably going to spend that much on a drink anyway. No harm, no foul.
Tainted glass.
Yeah.
That black and white.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I just said about that. That it has kind of like that jaminess, and now I see what you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
It does smell like someone's grandfather. He doesn't smell like this, but.
This is the peated, the peated barrel we did with. Balcone. So it's not here yet. It's supposed to be in the next few weeks.
Nice.
We'll probably go through Total Wine with it. But
yeah, so Star Ward is great, and they have a really cool barrel program.
Yeah? I didn't know they did barrels.
Yeah. And you get to go to Australia to do it.
Oh, that's a different ballgame.
But here's the thing, right? So for someone like me with two bars, it would be about 240, 250 bottle kind of thing of a niche, extremely niche thing.
Right.
With very little brand awareness. So you would have to be like carrying this banner.
Right.
And hoping not to piss off your class B.
Sure.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And
everything else. So in my head, I'm like, man, I really love this stuff.
Right.
But am I the only one?
You would have to have the one guy that comes in every single day that orders four drinks after 5 o'clock and stays until 8,
that.
Right?
I mean, if you're
talking a lot more than that.
Yeah. If
it's a 750, you're talking about roughly 16 shots in the bottle at 1.5 ounce pours.
Yeah.
And so that's per bottle, then times that by 250.
Well, and there's a lot of stuff that deserves your attention, but it's too early.
Right.
The market's not right. The people aren't right. And I think that's what happened with Stranahan's. I think it's a classic example of American single malt. And but that barrel program is kind of a hard sell, especially.
And it shouldn't be.
For sure.
It shouldn't be. So I did a barrel with them. And,
oh, that's right. You guys paired it with your OWA, which is, of course, the easiest sell. You don't have to.
Yeah. It sells itself, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but it, you know, I did the program with them. The juice was amazing, right? I really loved it. It was a 3-year-old single malt, had great depth, great flavor, great everything to it. And like your group is like, ugh, Stranahan's, you know, and I'm like, man, do you guys not understand that Stranahan's was one of the first like American single malt?
I feel like it's a staple, you know? But also I feel like it's not requested unless it's seen almost. Because I've sat on a Stranahan's bottle for at least, I mean, for a year, we just got rid of it. And I was like, should I get
And that was one bottle. Or? I had 240 bottles.
Yeah, that's intense. Well, see, okay.
That's the difference.
And that's where you get bit a little bit sometimes on them.
Yeah.
That's my frustration with some of the flack the group catches. That's not necessarily their fault. With you having a bar, if you bring it in, I said it's set there. People already had that opinion about it.
Yeah.
This is it with the online forums, you're just hearing those opinions.
Yeah.
So the feedback, so there's no like, the group as a whole has no opinion of any specific brand. There's a handful of loud opinions about certain brands.
Yeah.
You know, I feel
well, there's certain people that have, there's certain people who have a louder voice because,
that's a good
way, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So but I want to say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that there was a lot of people that didn't want the Stranahan's, but then bought it because they wanted the
correct. Yeah, yeah. So
and then they tried it, and then they're like, "Man, that was really, really good." It's kind of, you know, and it's sometimes you have to force your hand and say, "Look, man, I'm making you buy the second bottle to go with a bottle that you're already going to buy
or flip mm-hmm.
or flip or whatever, right?" And you buy it, and you're like, "Man, I don't really want this, but I have it. Let me try it." And they're like, "Oh." This is actually
them introducing. Right. Yeah, did you catch any flack for that? Like, did you hear about any flack about it yourself outside the group?
A little bit, but not much.
I'm sure they might have said something to Tony Kayes about it.
No, I mean, there's a couple people that are like, "Eh," but the pricing was done in a way that, like,
it wasn't
bad,
it
was like 70
bucks,
like 70, 75 for two bottles, or something. Yeah. It was something reasonable that, like, we kind of made it a package,
right?
Where you didn't feel as if you're getting like beat up, like all of a sudden you got to spend $500 and you get two bottles, and I only wanted one of them. I didn't want the second one.
I don't, and I'm not talking, I'm not being ugly towards Morgan and his group, but that's part of the attraction to the group for some bars. When you do a barrel pick at a bar, you're obligated, and you don't want to piss off your class B. You don't want to piss off your supplier if it's sitting around at the warehouse. Your wholesaler, distributor. Yeah. You've got to get rid of the barel if you're going to take it.
Yeah,
so,
move it. It's like
there's a lot of on-premise accounts that will basically just make an announcement right during OND when there's a bunch of stuff sitting around. And last year, the Houston Bourbon Consortium dumped the 3 barrels of Russell's, a barrel of Knob Creek. I mean, it was like 6 barrels worth of stuff. They couldn't work through their bars.
Yeah.
And
the
group
tough.
Lined up like that, you know?
Oh, so, really? Just
now
for...
The Knob Creek's a tough sell at $125 a bottle for those limited edition ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, it's always trying to figure out a way to make it work, and you're going to catch negative opinions no matter what you do. So.
As long as there's no like bashing. I'm like,
no, but what I always do when I do these barrels is I treat it like a co-op with my Class B.
Okay.
So basically, like the Jack Rye just came, right? There's only 50 barrels that were released for the United States for private bottling.
For the, I think it's 60.
60?
For the Tennessee,
I was told 50.
And the rye.
I was told 50. Now it could be 60. I mean,
sure, then, but who cares?
Yeah, 10 barrels one way there.
Stop fighting. You're making me sad. Really stop.
No, but it's super limited amount, sure. Right? So in theory, it's one estate. But that's not really how it works out. You know, like Texas, I think, got 6 or 7
barrels.
Yeah, we
get a little love. Yeah.
but, like, basically, you know, what I'll do is that as soon as something like that comes in, I'll post a photo and say, hey, look, it's available for retail at Tony K's. And that's who I work with for my Class B for, like, 99% of what I purchase.
Sure.
So
same for Poison Girl.
Yeah.
Same for
there's a lot of us that have, you know, I've been with Tony K's from, like, day one. I think Poison Girl jumped around a lot, but they now do their prime – the vast majority of their stuff is Tony Case too, because they're just easy to work with.
Sure.
And so what will happen is I just say, hey, go to the store. It's a small mom and pop store. So it's not like a mega store like Specs is.
Right.
You know, Specs is, you know, a city block for crying out loud. This is smaller. It's more intimate. It means more to them to have, like if one customer comes in there and buys one of my bottles from my barrel, they're probably also going to buy something else.
Yeah.
They might get a bottle
of
wine.
Good selection.
Yeah. You know,
it's more intimate.
The liquor stores, a lot of the mom and pops will complain that, you know, like, hey, they only come in for our barrel stuff. Well, do you have anything else worth buying on the shelf?
Right.
Yeah.
Like if Tony K's does put a lot of effort in a decent selection. You go in, you can find Russell's Reserve Rye on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
You can find stuff that goes above and beyond just barrel picks. But of course, when, you know, they do a lot of barrel picks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's always something worth buying at Tony K's.
Plus, they're easier to work with. So if you're
have
a consumer,
about doing another store like a Houston Wine Merchant, like a
I did Houston Wine. So I did Houston Wine Merchant for a little bit, and I liked them in a lot of regards. But I don't order enough from them.
Sure.
Okay.
So I have an accounts with Houston Wine Merchant. I have one with Specs. I have one with Goody Goody. And I have
Could
one
you focus on Tony K's
because it's the easiest.
Sure, sure.
You know, I
to low be, maintenance. I tell people
low maintenance. Thing. Anna is incredible to deal with. I could pull my phone out right now, call her. She's going to answer the sure. phone, and she's going to be super easy to deal with. I was really disappointed with Goody Goody. I don't know, and this is more on the wholesale side than the sure. retail side.
Yeah.
Do you deal direct? Would it be Sam that you deal with?
Like no, you don't deal with the person directly. You deal with the website, and that's the problem. So what
How
happens
are you
is
saying
that,
when it's like discontinued or
yeah,
you,
so
even
inventory
if you order,
is not updated, or,
it's right, nowhere, it's,
right.
and it's not
I
even
have that
close.
Issue.
It's not even close to being updated. So
right.
if you want on the website, say right now, they're going to say they have all these really cool things,
right? Right,
and you're going to be super excited,
right?
And I literally put together like a $3,000 order once online,
right?
And zero bottles showed up.
You need to stop that.
Zero.
See, and that's one of the frustrating things.
And the worst thing is that they never even called.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, hey.
You get the invoice of the delivery and it's yeah. like.
This just wasn't available.
And right. the entire
and,
order
right.
was discontinued.
Crazy. What did you order? Because
it was a bunch of really cool random
time.
Scotches and things like that that yeah. they claimed to have, and then and
right.
they didn't have them.
You
and
had
that's
the same
frustrating.
Problem?
Well, yeah, because things are allocated. So my orders, I try and stay within a certain range. And there are things like recently, you know, like Dalmore, 1942, Blanton's,
yeah.
things like that. Like I will just put in the order because I want to just. Like,
well,
please
you
have
should.
It,
yeah, yeah.
you know,
Good
but,
stuff.
And then I'll get the confirmation and I just put in like a pretty cool order, like to fill up the back bar. And I just was like, I did inventory and I was like, man, we have a very sad Scotch whiskey list. Like, let me just go ahead and like order like a bunch of stuff, a bunch of cool stuff. And we didn't get like, you know, I messaged my GM and I'm like, look, this price is probably going to drop about like 1500, like,
yeah.
which is a lot. And he was like, that's a big order. And I was like, but probably not going to get it. And ended up dropping like
right. you got like
yeah yeah
and
a lot
let me say
and we didn't
that,
get as much
I don't want
wine's not great about it either
yeah and very, I don't want to knock them I think the city itself is better having a Goody Goody and Total
oh,
Wine
sure.
here
because yeah, sure,
it keeps specs on
there's just a lot
yeah.
of there's a lot
you
of
know?
Gears in the works and a lot of balls get dropped and I've loved working with there's a new guy I'm dealing with at Total Wines named Leonard. He's been fantastic. But before, when we brought barrels through, we'd have to go through the corporate office would send it down to the state level. And by the time it like, all right, we're going to drop this day at these stores, have it ready. And then everything's wrong. It's at the wrong
right.
store.
Right.
The wrong
mm-hmm.
price came in. Someone
yeah.
else's
yeah.
barrel pick came in. It wasn't even our
yeah.
barrel pick. It was
yeah.
someone else's. And so it's an unfortunate part of this thing is that there's a lot of moving gears from the top down.
Yeah.
Specs apparently is really great at it, but they are local. So it's a little bit easier.
Well, and they've been doing it for so long.
Sure.
You know, and,
yeah.
you know, again, as I said, I think it's great having other big retailers here because Specs was basically doing whatever they wanted to do.
Really.
Yeah. You know, there was no one big enough. And anyone that started kind of getting multi-locations,
yeah,
like
yeah.
at Richards, they bought.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so.
So there was no chance for anyone.
No,
that, yeah.
no. So there wasn't any real competition
right.
for them. So they would do business however they saw fit. And great, that's their prerogative. But it doesn't mean that I would want to do business with them.
Sure.
In terms of like $20,000 plus a month
right.
purchasing.
Right.
You know.
Well, the mom and pops, there tends to be a certain level of concierge. I can't, my mouth's numb. a certain level of care.
Yeah.
there tends to be, you can call her right now. She'll pick up the phone. Mike, I got you.
Yeah.
Right.
And I've heard nothing but good things with Tony K's. I've talked to her a couple times, but it's never easy. Nothing's ever easy.
Yeah.
So.
Nothing ever is easy.
I think that's very cool, though, to have that kind of personal relationship. It's kind of like a comparison. I know this is kind of silly, but if you like are staying in a hotel and you're just one of the like hundreds of people in a hotel, or you get an Airbnb and have like a super host where they're just like kind of like
above
tending
beyond,
to you and
yeah.
going above and beyond for you and making sure that you get what you need and are taking care of you. So I think that's important. I think that's kind of missing and lacking.
Yeah, I agree. You know? And you know, again, you know, I used to live a block from Specs in Midtown. I still am in there probably once or twice a month for various things that I can only get through Specs.
With Specs, yeah.
And you know, again, they do a good job, but at the same time, what is lacking is that personal level of service,
sure.
Because no one cares.
Right.
They don't have time.
They're going to get their money either way. I mean, they're going to get business either way.
Yeah. So, if you go into that place, like right when they open, it's like 10, 11 o'clock in the morning or whatever.
There's a bunch of people there.
There's a bunch of people, but what you have is, you know, I guess sales associates. That are literally with shopping carts filling, wholesale orders. Mm. And like, if you're not paying attention, you're going to get run over because these guys have like 300 orders to pull
to get
through,
you know, and get stickered and invoiced and out the door to the retailer.
Right.
And you know, it's not easy, but at the same time, there's something to be said, hey, I'm sorry, or excuse me.
Sure.
Or, you know what I mean?
And reach out to you, send an email, you know, every time I get an email from Brittany or Chris, I'm like, all right. A little special.
Yeah. You know, but it's kind of one of those things that, again, when you're spending $20,000 plus at a retailer, it's like, look, man.
Yeah. You want to feel a little like you're doing a little special, doing a little something.
I wish I got a call more often for some things. Like, there's a lot of stores that you, like, you know, spend quite a bit of money at, and you're like, hey, man, when's that Well at Foolproof coming out? Like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Speaking of which, are you going to be doing, and I know we've got to wrap up, and I know you have to go. What's coming down the barrel pick pipeline for you guys?
So I really put that whole thing to rest. I wasn't going to do them because the big issue was because of my relationships with different brands, I get access to really cool things.
Sure.
And even when I pick, say, like a Weller, right? My Weller is different than other people's barrel pick Wellers.
That's very cool.
The pool that I get to pick from.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean? Like it's
more special.
It's more special. And mm-hmm. It's because I've been doing business for 12 years. We have personal relationships. You know, in some cases, I know people's wives and kids and things like that. And Christmas cards are exchanged. So the problem is that the general consumer, if they walk into, say, a Tony Case.
Sure.
And they see five different barrel picks of, say, you know, whatever, Old Forester.
Sure.
It could be Russell's Reserve, whatever. It doesn't really matter what the what is. In their mind, all they see is five barrel picks. And in their mind, they're all equal. Like they're all on same par. Example would be these four bottles right here. Each one is different.
Right.
But if just looking at them like we are right now.
Very similar in a lot of ways.
Very similar to color. On the two on the ends are the same. The two in the middle are the same. Like, you would, you know, if you're just John Q. Public and you're walking into the store, you're like, oh, whatever.
Yeah, just like,
do I want the dark one or do I want the light one? You're not thinking like, well, this person is who picked it and they had access to this. And it's very long, complicated thing to explain to people.
Right.
So what happens is that there's so many barrel picks going on in this city.
Oh, there's a ton. Yeah.
So many. So you got stores.
40 this year, yeah.
Yeah, right. So you guys are doing 40?
40, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
I say 40 projects.
Yeah.
One of them is the Foursquare release that we're getting, and it's 1,000 bottles statewide.
Oh, wow.
So it's
– yeah, that's crazy. Like for me, I would be like
– we've got a cognac.
Yeah.
We've got an 18-year-old cognac coming that's 490 bottles.
Yeah.
So there's quite a bit, and the trick there is to
pre-sell them.
God. First of all, I don't need my PayPal locked up with like all these different orders of 6,500 people. And what we do is we work with about 40 mom and pop stores, Specs, Total Wine, and we work with them in other cities. So we'll be sending, there's a little small club up in Dallas, a couple of them. We'll send about 60 bottles up there. Before it hits the distribution warehouse, so that they don't have to like move stuff around.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that.
Nice. Actually really cool.
There's a logistical option. Nightmare, I'm sure, to this. That like the first couple times you had to go through this,
it was a nightmare.
Then once you figure it out, then it's like, okay, you want to do that again? Okay, cool, no problem.
We did an Armagnac barrel, and it was 375 bottles, $180 a bottle retail, so $200 after tax. And we trying to get 50 of those bottles up to Dallas after it already hit the Houston warehouse. It was like, So in the future, now we know.
Yeah, now you know.
We're actually importing this. This is the first and only cognac barrel in the state from this brand. And we had it imported and we just got label approval. But we do, the trick to being able to do those things is to spread that love around. You know, we've got a north side store, a south side store, a whole bunch in the middle.
Yeah, so it makes it super convenient. So if you live in like in you know, Clear Lake like you don't have to go to the Woodlands to get it.
Correct.
Because no one's going to do
which
that.
Which is nice.
No one's doing it.
Well, I mean, you've seen the line at Tony K's on a Saturday release. It's people are lined up at 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Place doesn't open for two, and it's sun facing. So you're, for those 2 hours,
bacon.
8 a.m. to 10.
That's how you notice.
You're sun, listen, I'm sunburned now just talking about it. Like, it's not, we've
like the life of a ginger.
we've gone over. I'll let Jack clean up the episode, but thank you so much for coming. I definitely, if there's anything you want to plug, this will air next weekend.
No, I'm pretty comfortable with myself. And after the drinks, I feel even more comfortable. Yeah. So,
You guys doing any barrel selections, any kind of fun things, any events, dinners?
Not that I know of. I know we're rolling out our fall cocktail menu, and I'm trying to do that within the next, week and a half to 2 weeks. There'll be some new cocktails on the menu. But other than that, not much really. The restaurant is really cool in itself. The bar program is really awesome. And again, I've been expanding all of our scotches, whiskeys, and moving on into gins as well. I know this is about the bourbon whiskey, but
We love everything. Yeah, it's not just bourbon. We love scotch. We love it all.
We just like alcohol. Right?
Same. And it's been really fun for me in my position to be able to kind of taste things and gain more knowledge. And even being on this podcast today, I've already gained a lot of knowledge. I probably will try and get some of this stuff on my back bar.
You mentioned the Dom War already. I definitely jump on that. I would like to see. You mentioned that earlier, made me think of it. Macallan does a classic cut now, which is a little higher proof of their younger whiskey, but it's so sherry influenced. I would love to see a Dalmore at a bump in proof, even if it's young on the younger side.
So the next time I'm on, if you have me back again, we'll have a conversation about proof.
Sure.
Because that's a long conversation.
Oh, I'd love to.
Another one.
But I will tell you that Richard drops the whiskey down to about 74
during tastings.
And nosings. And
Bill Samuels, I think you said he does it at 60 proof.
Yeah,
when they're tastings, you drop it down and you can notice any impurities or any kind of if there's something
it's
weird.
Really cool.
It'll really shine at that point.
And on top of the fact, you got thousands, if not millions, of barrels laying around.
You like burn your mouth out.
Yeah, and but there's a. If the best in the world, and we live in an era where some of the greatest that have ever made whiskey are walking this planet, and they're saying, hey, I like it at 60 and 70 or even 80.
Sure.
There's something to be said for that. Mm-hmm. Now, if you like Christopher likes high proof whiskey.
I like a big punch in the face, whether it's peat, whether it's oak. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of super old whiskeys, but I had a 45-year-old Armagnac that tasted just... But it was an experience, and I love the experience.
Yeah.
Did you try this one, by the way? Can I smell this? I just want to smell it.
But I would love to have the conversation over proof. I think that'd be a great conversation.
Yeah.
I drink all proofs.
Yeah. But you prefer?
I like a big mouthfeel.
I usually say around 90.
You want to touch it?
Yeah, just a small amount. But I don't.
Ooh, I smell that.
That's so smoky.
But for me personally, I also then add water to it. And I think the industry does a really bad job of saying, hey, this is uncut, unfiltered, whatever.
Sure.
But it's done this way so that you can then proof it to whatever you prefer.
Sure.
So the idea is that you're going to add at least a couple drops of water to it or drop an ice cube in it.
I don't buy pre-made iced tea. I like to make my tea myself. I'd rather add the water myself to whatever proof you wanted.
Well, and Balcones is a perfect example, right? They bottle at a higher proof because they know that consumers may make it in a cocktail. They may throw ice in there. They may want to put water. So it makes it more versatile to what you want.
It's actually really good. I like that a lot.
Medicinal.
Not that I'm not a huge fan of Lafroy, but that is actually really good and smooth.
52.6. Well, thanks again. Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Wow.
Cheers. Thank you for having me.
Cheers. Thanks for
having me.
Pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
Balcones' first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.